Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
Hello, hello, hello. Happy Friday afternoon. It's a football Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Week two of NFL action. Both sides of the bay going for a 2-0 record. 49ers. I mean, I guess it's not officially good news, but correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, as I, Matt Kolsky, and joined by Ray Ratto and Whitey Gleason. And you know what? Before I jump right into the Niners, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks. It's great to be here. It's Friday. Great to be on the game. And Bart did not smell nearly as soupy as I expected it to today. So having a great day. I already feel ahead of the game here on the game.
Good. Then you'll feel good about covering both our shifts around 4 o'clock.
You got it.
Good.
That's what it takes, big fella. By the way, last time I saw you, Ray, I believe it was downtown as we were getting ready for the 2016 Super Bowl, Carolina and Denver. And after last night, how long ago does that seem like?
Not nearly long enough, because it reminds me of one of the many ways in which Levi's Stadium is inadequate to current needs.
Moscone Center was beautiful, though.
Yeah, except that I spent most of my time at the hotel where all the work was getting done.
Yeah, well, that's your fault. You're the one who chose to do the work. Nick Bosa, questionable, limited participant. That's all I need to see. He's playing, right?
Sure he's playing. Why wouldn't he play against the leaky Bengal offensive line?
Yes. So that's good news today. Jimmy Ward, questionable. I don't know. Hurd, Taylor, wide receiver depth still suffering. Sounds like those two will be out until after the bye in all likelihood. Jason Verrett.
Yes.
Going to make his 49ers debut. Which,
playmaker.
Okay. So you're very excited about Jason Verrett. So here's what it's like the Hall of Fame room. Anytime a Hall of Famer gets nominated, they have an advocate. So I look at this roster and I say, pass defense looked pretty good last week. I don't know where I'm putting Jason Verrett. He's not going to start over Akella Witherspoon for me. Certainly not starting over Richard Sherman. I guess he could play the slot.
Sure.
I don't know if he does that or not, frankly, because he hasn't been on the field in 4 years.
Right.
But
he hasn't
why
been
are
healthy.
We excited about Jason Verrett?
Because when he's healthy, and let's assume he's somewhat healthy now, relatively speaking, he's a playmaker. He's also from Fairfield, and I'm from Vallejo. So,
That
has something to do with it, maybe.
If we dig in, you guys like share a high school English teacher or something?
No, not at all.
Ew.
Not at all.
What?
Share a high school English
teacher? Okay, Ray.
Sorry. Choose your words better.
Okay.
But
you know what? I'm not
going
to even correct it because you're going to find a way to pervert that as well.
With the Chargers, as a member of the secondary, he showed that he can make plays, and obviously the 49ers could still use playmakers in the secondary.
So the guy who was ticketed for defensive back stardom, really, before the injuries derailed his career.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, he's going to play, but he's not going to start, and it doesn't really matter who he's how you start. It matters how many snaps he gets, because we've been on that all week. I mean, if he gets 10 snaps and it doesn't matter, if he gets 40 snaps, then that's an interesting way to use him.
Hey, Ray, you got to try to slow down the red rifle this week, so good luck.
I don't have to do anything. I mean, I'm trying to decide which way I want to bet that. I'm thinking Cincinnati.
Really?
Right now.
Just because contrarian bettors do very well early in the season.
Are we at 2 on the number?
It was 2 yesterday. I'll look now because I want you to get up-to-date information.
So throughout the show today, we got a lot going on. Obviously, we don't need the music.
I'm killing time till I find the information.
Well, I was going to kill time with my voice. We are going to talk football with Tom Brenneman, 320. He'll be on the call for Niners and Bengals this weekend. We're also going to talk to Dave Lapham. Is that right?
Lapham.
I tried. PH, you know.
The line is one.
It's down to one.
Yes.
Bengals by one.
Right.
Interesting.
It's been an interesting. I mean, it opened with 49ers 2, and it went down, and then it became a pick'em on Monday, or Tuesday, in fact. And then all of a sudden, a flood of Cincinnati money. Now it's coming back.
Aren't the Bengals overrated by the bettors here, given that what they do last week? They almost beat Seattle. The 49ers actually won a game last week.
Because recency bias is the best way to go broke early. Figure out where the public's going and go the other way until you figure out what teams you like to bet on and to fade.
But, Ray, wouldn't that mean that you'd be betting on the 49ers?
Why? The money's now coming in on the 49ers more.
Okay, but the line opened. The vast majority of the money overall has come in on Cincinnati. Yeah. No?
This is not normally a game I would play.
Fair enough.
Which is why I would wait and see where the late money is. And it seems like it's coming in on the Niners.
We'll do investment advice later on. 408 Texter wants Verrett to take snaps from Sherman more than from Witherspoon. We'll talk about Verrett's potential role later on in the program. Like I said, Tom Brenneman will be on the call. He'll join us at 3:20. Dave Lapham, got it right that time. You're welcome, Dave. That's at 4. He is on the call for Cincinnati. And before that, Jim Barnett joins us at 2:45, not to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals and the San Francisco 49ers, but to talk about the end of, I was going to say, a spectacular career. And maybe that's not the right way to put it.
In a sense, it was.
A remarkable career,
yes,
is the way I would go. Because Sean Livingston is not a Hall of Famer, and I don't believe he even was an all-star at any point in his career, although I'd have to double-check that. He might have snuck in one time.
He almost certainly would have been.
He was a kid who I saw play in high school live. He was, I believe, East Peoria High School, which played my high school, Evanston High School, in a tournament. And
were you guarding him?
I was in college at that point, No, by God, I wasn't even on my high school basketball team, much less the varsity that would have played against Sean Livingston. But the guys who did make that team were about as much of a match for Sean Livingston as I would have been, because it was a Sean Livingston dunk show, the game that I saw him play against my high school. He was a remarkable talent who sustained a not just potentially career-ending, but potentially life-altering injury, and turned it into an incredibly productive career as one of the most consummate professionals you'll find in the sport. I mean, I love this guy as a basketball player, and what he accomplished is pretty incredible.
He is one of the very few people who defines the Los Angeles Clippers, because everybody, when he got taken, said, that's a great get. And then, you know, then his knee exploded.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, everybody said, it's the Clippers. If he'd been tip guy, anybody else, that wouldn't have happened. But it's just, he defined the scenario and their litany of bad luck. And his might be the most catastrophic of them all.
Fourth pick in 2004, 2007, injured his knee so badly that there were whispers. Apparently at the hospital, he was told, you may lose the leg. And he plays 15 years.
15 years. And again, you made the point. He was an explosive athlete.
He was ridiculous on all levels.
Yeah. And totally had to change everything he did and became a wildly productive NBA player. And thanks to this marriage with Steve Kerr's Warriors, I think will sort of be forever remembered, not just for the knee, which of course is a dramatic moment and people will remember, but also as a really important part of three titles and five trips to the finals.
And also because he was who he was, he got a contract that most guys wouldn't have gotten at the end of their careers.
Yes.
They'd have said, nope, we're done now. And the Warriors, either because they're soft touches or because he was an adult in the room at a time when there aren't very many adults in any room, got another deal that most, like I said, most guys would not have gotten that.
So on to the front office for Sean Livingston?
He may not want to.
I think he does whatever. Yeah, he's a guy who could do whatever he wants.
I mean, let's put it this way. If he asks, he's got a job.
I think it could be a front office job with the Warriors, even a couple other places. I think he's a guy who could do broadcasting or analysis work if he wanted to. He's smart. He knows his way around a microphone. Sean Livingston could also simply walk off into the sunset, and we may never hear from him again, though. It'll be interesting to see what he chooses to do. We will talk about his career with the one and only JB at 2:45. But coming up next, I'm frustrated, folks. I am frustrated because stupidity angers and annoys me.
Are you talking about me being here today?
No. As a matter of fact, it's Ray. No, I very much appreciate the attendance of Whitey Gleason in the place of Damon Bruce. Ray Ratto is here. I'm Matt Kolsky, and I'm going to get some football frustration off my chest coming up next, because I just want things in the world to not be stupid and wrong. That's all.
Well,
I just want
the
things
wrong planet. That's
to not be
that's
stupid
a you problem.
And wrong. I really think we can do this, world. I think we can have a world where stuff isn't stupid and wrong all the time. The NFL is really putting that to the test, though. I watched two of the stupidest minutes of game time in my life last night. Thursday Night Football, I guess we should expect it at this point, but we will get into that next. I'm Matt Kolsky alongside Ray Ratto and Whitey Gleason on the Damon Bruce Show.
What's
and now
happening?
Elena. I have to introduce Elena.
What's
Excuse
that?
Me, everyone.
I
and
am
now,
Elena.
It's time for Elena Matsourkas.
What's happening on the game brought to you by California Bank and Trust. The Niners getting set to play the Bengals in Cincy on Sunday. Nick Bosa was limited in practice today and is officially listed as questionable with right ankle sprain. The man behind the mic for 49ers Bengals, Tom Brenneman, previews the matchup today at 3:20. Sean Livingston announced his retirement today after 15 seasons. Jim Barnett watched Sean win 3 championships over the past 5 years with the Warriors, and he'll reflect on Sean's career when he joins the guys at 2:45. Don't forget, you can listen to all your favorite 95.7 The Game shows live on the go using the radio.com app. Sponsored by California Bank and Trust. California Bank and Trust electronic solutions will help you accelerate collections and cash flow. Create, track, and manage invoices and payments faster and easier than ever. Visit calbanktrust.com today. I'm Elena Matsourkas on the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
We are back. Matt Kolsky, Ray Ratto, Whitey Gleason in for Damon Bruce today. I'm angry. I mean, that's just, to be fair, that's how I go through a lot of my life, angry and frustrated. But in this instance, I have a specific reason or set of reasons for my anger and frustration. And look, it's a football Friday.
It's a football Friday. It's beautiful outside. How can you be so
angry? I should be feeling great.
Wait a minute. Why should he feel great? Because we're not outside. We're inside.
We will be, I'm assuming. Maybe I'm an optimist. I think we're going to be outside at some point today.
Yeah, in 3 hours and 36 minutes. By then, it won't be a beautiful day anymore. It'll just be a crummy, traffic-clogged weekend beginning.
You've just learned something important about Ray, which is much like John Gruden at any time can count back from 100 by threes, Ray Ratto at any time can tell you exactly how far we are away from the final buzzer of the show.
Remarkable. Yeah, it's incredible.
It's just math.
To the minute. But very quickly,
math.
Ray. You're very quick with it. I don't take that credit away from yourself.
See, let me see. 54 minus 19. What could that be?
It's going to take me a minute. It's a Football Friday brought to you by Oaks Card Club. Play it smart. Play it Oaks. And I should be happy.
You should be.
It's the second week of the NFL season. What could have gone wrong by now? Right? Here's the thing. And You know what? Let's just even track it back to right before the mics got turned on for this segment. What did you say to us just before we came back from break, Whitey?
How long will it be before replay has ruined sports?
Okay. And Ray said it already has, and then the
show
started.
What a surprise. What a surprise that he went that way. So,
right. After you said that, everything was very predictable. But basically, that question is a question that gets asked a lot. And my response is, that's the wrong question. Replay doesn't do anything. Replay is a useful tool. You know how I know? Because every game I watch, sitting at home on my couch, they use replay to show me what actually happened. And from the replays, I get a better sense of what actually happened. Now, as far as I'm concerned, and look, no disrespect to fans, because fans are important too, but really, in my view, there's no group of people who it's more important to know exactly what happened than the officials calling the game. So I would like them to know exactly what happened whenever possible. Hence, replay is a useful tool. The problem, of course, is that it's applied either idiotically or incorrectly far too frequently. And now we get to last night. Let's start at the beginning of this long list of idiocy that transpired at the end of the Panthers-Tampa Bay Buccaneers game.
By the way, another Thursday night classic.
Unbelievable. And you know what else? Anytime you think you know what's going to happen in a Thursday night football game, bet the opposite. Because it always goes ridiculous. Whatever reasonable outcomes might happen, bet the most unreasonable outcome, and you'll win Thursday night more often than not. The first thing that was pretty silly. Now, okay, let's just cut to the end of the game because it was a not-so-highly competitive football game for 3 4/5 quarters.
It was an eyesore.
Pretty exciting finish, though.
Definitely an exciting finish. 6-point game. Panthers have the ball. They got it with around 2.5 minutes. Had to go the length of the field for a touchdown to win.
I'm on the edge of my seat as you're describing it here, and I already know what happened.
Look, it had the chance to be thrilling. And that's why this is even more infuriating, what I'm about to describe, because instead of thrilling, I got 35 minutes of Jerome Boger playing with himself. So,
I think it's time to go again.
That's right. That's how I felt watching it at home. Ugh. Why am I watching Jerome Boger play with himself instead of an exciting end to a football game?
What is wrong with you?
A lot. The first thing that happens is receiver Curtis Samuel of the Carolina Panthers is running a double move on the Tampa Bay corner. Makes his first move. Corner hits him basically like he's trying to tackle him in the open field. And then the ball is thrown, what would you say, 10 yards or so beyond the receiver? Because he's totally taken off the path of the route.
That happened a lot last night, but yes.
Yeah. You're right. I should not have said it's just because he was taken off the path of the route. The ball could have been 10 yards beyond the right wide receiver by either quarterback at any time. That said, you understand why, when no flag was thrown, Ron Rivera challenged looking for pass interference. Now, this is where it gets a little bit technical. It's only pass interference if the contact occurs when the ball's in the air. Pass interference is reviewable for the first time this season. Illegal contact, which is what happens if the exact same contact occurs before the ball is in the air, is a different penalty with a different consequence, which is a separate argument we can have, and not reviewable. Now, let's rewind again for 1 second. What is the point of replay?
To needlessly extend a game that you already hate because it's been awful the entire night.
Fair
to
enough.
Make it more Whitey, tedious. To
what
make
would you, I'm alone here. Albie?
Yes, I got you. It's to inform the fans.
No.
To show us what really happened.
Well, that's what the point of the existence of the technology is. But I'm saying they
to get
have
the calls
instant
right.
Replay. To get calls right.
To get the calls right.
That's the whole point of having this in the sport. In fact, that's the whole reason we've added this rule. Is because there was such an egregious non-call, such an obvious pass interference that wasn't called, that, oh boy, if that exact thing happens again, we got to be able to correct it. Now, a good business, a smart group of people, would say, okay, if that exact thing happens again, we got to be able to correct it. Also, what are some other things like that that could happen that we should be prepared for? What the NFL says is, man, if that exact thing happens again, we got to be prepared for it. And someone, I assume, who's seventh in command is like, you guys want to consider some other scenarios? And the top six are like, nah, we're good. Because how did you not envision illegal contact, blatant illegal contact showing up on one of these reviews? And now you've just shown us at home 35 replays of an obvious penalty being committed that you're not going to call because it's the wrong penalty.
And the NFL is probably fine with that.
That's what staggers me.
The message that the NFL, and this may come from Roger all the way at the top, is trying to send to coaches is, you can challenge a PI, but if there's a PI called, we're not going to reverse it. And if there's not one called, we're not going to call it unless the receiver is murdered. So go ahead. You know, we're trying to show everyone that we want to fix this problem. And we do have this in our pocket if something like this happens in a playoff game. But if it happens on a Thursday night, sorry, nothing doing.
More to the point, in the same way that they couldn't figure out what a catch was, in the same way that they were willing to ruin the game by locking out the officials several years ago,
yeah,
the NFL is terrible at one thing above all other things, and that's presenting football. Because it's not really about the game at all. Their expertise is no longer football. Their expertise comes in two ways. Marketing and technology. And if you can't use all this technology that you've brought in, it's useless. And what they've done by making the rule book itself an impenetrable phone book is render the reason why replay could work inoperable. They basically said, we're giving you a rule book that we can't decipher, and we're going to show you plays over and over again, and they'll show you the same thing over and over again. But then we have to apply it to a rule book that basically is written in Bulgarian. We don't know what it means. You don't know what it means. So we're just going to make stuff up on the fly because we don't mind that we suck at this. Because people are going to forget about the Thursday night game when Sunday's games come. They don't care. And really, I mean, if you talk about the conference final last year with the Rams and Saints, great hue and cry, except in New Orleans, nobody cares anymore. They're not in for exactitude. All they want to know is, did we cover, did we win?
Monday night, they were all wearing referee shirts at the game. So
yeah, and you know what? Are they going to wear referee shirts again? No, that was a one-time thing to get on television. It's all about the illusion of trying to figure out the sport they can know that they've ruined, but they can't do it anymore because everything they do every year, they add new rules and change things because of one weird thing that happened the year before.
I have described this as a Jenga tower of idiocy because what they do is they react specifically to one thing that happened the year before and they add some exception or addendum or whatever to the point where they're just piling all these confusing half rules on top of each other and nothing makes sense anymore. And like Ray is saying, it's why they lost track of how to officiate whether something was a catch or not. It's why holding happens every play, and the frequency of the calling of it seems totally arbitrary week to week.
Of course, they're trying to have it both ways, and they're probably going to get away with it. They didn't want to change the rules, but they changed the rules so that we can review PI, but guess what? We're not actually going to change any of the calls. But if we have something egregious like this in a big game, we can still use that to correct the call. But otherwise, it's just going to be as if there is no review rule on PI, because we're not going to change the calls.
It's worse than that, though. It's the phenomenal arrogance.
Oh, absolutely.
That comes from saying we got this.
Absolutely.
When it is clear that A, they do not, and B, only change rules because something weird happened the year before. That's optics. They would be better off at this point, basically using replay for only one thing at all. When the referee fell over and died. They were better off when they just said, use your common sense, guys. Figure out what looks like it should happen and let it go at that. And if there was a call that didn't go right every now and then, suck it up. Because this system is no better and in some ways is worse. Because I don't believe they can get it right. I don't believe they care that much about getting it right. They've made the game demonstrably inferior by doing it the way they continue to do it.
But Mr. Kolsky, wouldn't you say that you are definitely in the minority, as upset as you are by this?
I don't know. I might be. But let's continue. Because that was just one of the idiotic things that happened. And I'd be curious to know, Ray, where you stand on the fact that on a critical play, heading into the two-minute warning, the Panthers were gifted a first down by one referee spotting the ball at the apparently appropriate place and then tossing it to another referee who spotted it a foot and a half ahead.
Well, who dropped it and then picked it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how is this happening?
It's happening because there is no governance, okay? I want chaos. I want every call to be bad. I want it to make no sense whatsoever, because it is only at that point that people will figure out that the real problem with NFL officiating is the rule book itself.
So how do we fix that? Because I agree with you.
The problem is
the rule
book.
More
hilarity. More rampant stupidity. More of the Jenga tower of idiocy. If you think you've had enough of it, you clearly haven't.
Yeah.
Because they have an unlimited supply of this. So let's put them to the test and say, okay, now just screw things up in every game. Make it a nightmare. And then basically if people start to walk away because they have no idea what the game is anymore, then maybe you'll figure it out. And if people don't care and they keep watching it, then you never had a problem in the first place.
I know this is neither here nor there, but if I'm a Tampa Bay fan, and I'm not, but if I'm a Tampa Bay fan,
I'm sorry.
I'm very angry that Coach Arians or somebody doesn't challenge that.
That's the next part, because idiocy in this final 2 minutes was definitely not limited to the referees. How did the Cardinals miss that?
Yeah, or the Bucs for that matter.
Bruce Arians.
I don't even know
where Bruce Arians is coaching. How do the Bucs miss that?
Where's Sean Dunstan in the replay room?
That's my exact question. How do they not have a guy? Doesn't every team in every sport have a guy now who watches on TV to tell you when everyone at home sees that a call should be made? Like, these are simple things, man. These are very straightforward things. Any football organization that doesn't have someone watching the television to help them out with reviews, it's a failure.
Which former Tampa Bay Buck are you going to hire to be that guy? Doug Williams, maybe?
I think you want to go more recent, you know? So where's Adam Archuleta?
Okay, fair enough.
Chaos is good. I'm going to say that till the end of time, because the NFL clearly supports it. They're in favor of it at all times. They show that to you every week.
Let's say we got this chaos.
Ratings are up. People want bad calls.
Ratings are not up.
Ratings are up.
They were last week anyway.
It's the only week you got, pal.
Okay.
I haven't seen the numbers from last night. Perhaps you have.
No.
I haven't seen the
numbers from this coming Sunday either.
I'm arguing this is a trend that goes back further than a week, and ratings are in a general decline. That's all.
They're up week to week, which is the only thing anybody ever cares about.
Right,
so I'm just saying people find laughable inexactitude to be more their speed.
Drop the streaming numbers on them, right?
Do you think that's true?
No, I want it to be true.
Right.
I don't care what's true or not, because the NFL doesn't care what's true or not.
See, that's the thing, is I don't think people want that. I think people would prefer a better product, and I think this is the sort of thinking that leads you to pay Roger Goodell $40 million, is you just look at the ledger. And you say, boy, we made a lot of money last year, and Roger Goodell was the commissioner, so I suppose he deserves a lot of money. And you don't think about, well, really what's important is how much money did you make relative to the opportunity? And it's the same way they manage the entire business. They don't think about opportunity cost at all. They can only confront what's immediately in front of them, and even then, not very well. But again, Bruce Arians is supposed to be the smart guy. He's supposed to be
quarterback whisperer guru guy.
Yes. He's always so clever. He wears a beret. And
that's a Kangol.
My bad. Yeah. And he doesn't have somebody with an eye on the broadcast? He doesn't have somebody tracking the spotting of the ball? Like,
kind of a crucial point of the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, you would think. Two-minute warning. Now, it didn't end up costing him. Right. But I'm with you. I would have been furious if I was not a Cardinals. Well, I'd also be furious as a Cardinals fan, but in this case, as a Buccaneers fan. And I'm not sure I'd be any less furious if I'm a Panthers fan with Ron Rivera. You get gift after gift after gift. To the point where you have a 4th and 8 inches at, what, the 2-yard line? And you're running some sort of weird, complicated stretch run?
Fake Philly special. Fake Philly.
You're giving me fakes and a stretch play with 1.5 minutes, no clock concerns. You can absolutely run it up the gut and take your time getting set up for your last 4 plays. You had at least 1 timeout, if I recall correctly. And you run to the outside? What? With Cam Newton? He can't just fall forward for you?
That's another story.
Yeah. It's staggering.
But, well, once again,
for intelligence is misplaced, and I understand that.
Well, no. But first of all, you're wrong about why Roger Goodell gets paid what he gets paid.
Okay.
He gets paid for 2 things and 2 things only. To do what the owners want him to do and make sure that he swindles the players during CBAs and the networks during TV negotiations. That's why he gets $44 million a year.
Pretty good at it, right?
Yeah, well, clearly. He doesn't get dime one for making the football better because it doesn't matter if the football's better. It only matters if people keep watching it.
The only way
that that's going to change is when owners decide that they want the show that they're putting on to be more in line with what the theories of football are. But they don't care. As long as the money's coming in, it can be a complete disaster.
And that's the point I was trying to make, Ray, is that that attitude is business with blinders on. As long as the money's coming in, I don't give a F. Well, that's all well and good, except what if by giving an F, you could make twice as much money?
Now, I'm not saying make twice as much money. That's
they can't
the point.
Make twice as much,
because the
Ray,
money doesn't come with better officiated football. The money comes with when you get Amazon to pay you and when you get Netflix to pay
and
you.
And why do they pay?
What?
Why do they pay?
Because it is still the one thing that people watch more than any other sport. That's
right.
Why.
And can you imagine that declining? In fact, would you say it has been declining, the quantity of people who want to watch?
I don't know how they count anymore, so it may not be that it's declining. Get less people paying more money,
that's beside the point.
It is the point, because it's not about the popularity of the sport; it's about the ability to move money.
Yes, I understand that.
Well, then that's what the argument should be.
And what I'm trying to ask is, can you conceive of a decrease in the popularity of football?
Yes, if you allowed the officials, if you actually allowed them to overturn PIs, I really think it would be a disaster, and I think it would adversely affect the popularity of the game. And I think that's why the NFL, the message that's going out there, rather subtly, maybe not so subtly, is don't challenge a PI because we're not going to switch it. But if they enforced that, we would have chaos, and I think it would adversely affect football.
See, this is where I disagree with you, but I appreciate that you're at least granting the premise. I would say what is more likely to decrease the popularity of football is when Joe and Frank and Linda on the couch watch a play 15 times and know the exact right adjudication of it and nevertheless have to watch it done wrong over and over again.
And we haven't
and
even
to
addressed...
Me,
yeah, go ahead, sorry.
No. Just to me, if you get those calls right, you are presenting a better product. And while a mediocre product may still sell at an incredibly high rate given how mediocre it is, I would argue a better product would sell better and would sell well for longer. So I do think people who had any sort of forethought would care about the quality of the football. And now you and I can disagree about whether this particular rule increases or decreases quality, and frankly, neither of us know for sure. But the fact that the sport, the league, doesn't seem to care either way, I do think that's detrimental.
We haven't even addressed how the delays themselves, regardless of the results they finally stumble upon, have adversely affected the
product. That's true, too. That is true, too. We'll get back into football's many failures over the course of the show. We'll also get into some successes, because look, both Bay Area teams had success. It's a small sample size.
The refs forgot to screw them.
It's just one game for each. It's I suppose, nothing to throw a party or write home about, but it's all we have, and it's all been victorious. So we're going to get into those guys. We talk Niners and Bengals with Tom Brenneman at 3:20. He'll be on the call. Fox, I'm guessing? Is that a fox? Tom Brenneman's a fox.
He is a fox.
That I did on purpose, right? He will be with us at 3:20. Dave Lapham, who will be on the call for Cincinnati, will join us at 4 o'clock. But coming up next, I am quite delighted that we are going to have the chance to talk to Jim Barnett, because Sean Livingston is hanging it up. We sort of saw this coming. Obviously, we knew he was no longer a Warrior. So not a surprise, but it is kind of the end of an era. And even if you don't want to go that far with me, it's the end of a really impressive and quite remarkable career. So we will talk about the career of Sean Livingston with Jim Barnett coming up right after this. I'm Matt Kolsky. He's Ray Ratto. Whitey Gleason in for Damon Bruce today. And we're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Not going to tell people what happened right before the mics went on this time around. It is a football Friday, ladies and gentlemen, and plenty of football talk throughout the afternoon, but some basketball news today as well. Sean Livingston, Warrior for the last five seasons, five of the best seasons in franchise history, if I may say so, and a key part of the team. He's hanging up the basketball shoes, retiring from the league. We knew this was a possibility. We knew he was not a Warrior this season, but nevertheless, today is the day it becomes official. Sean Livingston no longer in the NBA, so we reached out to our friend Jim Barnett, who, of course, got to watch Sean up close and personal these last 5 years. And JB, I mean, this is a guy who, never mind his career, nearly lost a leg at one point and finishes his career as one of the most important valued veteran pieces on a three-time champion. What was it like getting to see that sort of extra chapter of Sean's career?
Well, I think Sean was such a professional that anyone would love to have him be a member of the team. And as you say, and I believe it was in his third year with the Clippers, he was drafted right out of high school, did not go to college, but he was the number four overall pick back in 2004. And then I think in that third year, a little more than halfway through the year, he had that devastating leg knee injury specifically. And he tore everything you could in that knee. And there was even talk of amputation. Just, I mean, he was even thinking about not having a leg, much less getting back into the NBA. So he missed a whole year, and it took him another year and a half after that to really get back to playing. And I think that, but that, you know, maybe that shaped him a little bit, because he's always been very grateful. And it's amazing, because he just turned 34 on Thursday, yesterday. And so he is hanging it up. I think he probably could have played another year, because he always had great hops. I mean, he could still dunk the ball easily this last year with the Warriors. But he got by on more than just his talent, because his talent was limited. He was a good defender, especially in his early years. But he never even established at all a three-point shot. But he was a great mid-range jump shooter, and he was best for coming off the bench and give you a little spark, you know. And I know he was told to go in, get your shot, create your shot, and he could go do that anywhere from, you know, 10 to 15 feet. He'd rise above you, and he'd shoot, make shots that I could never make. I hated to have someone in my face, but it didn't bother him at all. And he made a living doing it that way. And, of course, the last 5 years, he's gone to the finals with the Warriors, and winning three championships in 15, 17, and 18. So it's a great way to go out for him, if you ask me.
The injury obviously affected him as a player. It turned him into into sort of an ancillary piece. But I wonder if without the injury, he would not have transitioned so quickly into being one of the adults in the room, which he certainly was in Golden State. Do you think the injury changed the way he viewed his place in the game as well as his skill set in the game?
Ray, I think that's a good observation, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. When I mentioned not going to college, I've always been skeptical, not so much anymore, but especially, Kevin Garnett made that transition in 1995 and came out. But a lot of guys have been duped into thinking they can play in the NBA right out of high school. And a lot of them can, and they're capable physically, but they're not capable emotionally. And I think with Sean Livingston, that happening when he was 22 years of age, third year in the league, yes, I think that affected him, and I think that matured him. Any kind of tragedy like that, because he didn't know. And so you put things in perspective, and you know what? You become a man very quickly. And he, I have to say, he was a man because he was the most professional you could. I've seen them all. I played for 11 years, and I've seen everybody from A to Z as far as from a player perspective, but also from a broadcaster and observing, all these last 34 years. He was the consummate professional because he was a team player. He had integrity on and off the court. He carried himself with dignity. I could see the way he's recently, in the last couple of years, became a father. The way he is as a father, I can see that tenderness that he has. The way he treats his wife. He grew up. And I think tragedy does force you into either, going one direction or going another direction, and you grow up and you take the responsibility and you see things in a different light, and you're grateful for what you have and you take advantage of everything. And I think, Ray, I think he did change his game. He looked at it in a different way. Although, again, he maybe he lost a step of quickness or whatever, but he had that springboard activity in his legs where he looked like he was on a pogo stick at times, and even up to this last year, because he could dunk the ball easily and go down the lane and do all those kinds of things. But I think it made him a better person, coming from that kind of near tragic, definitely tragic, but near career ending injury.
Jim, I know you touched on this, but as a guy who played before they had a three-point shot, how much did you appreciate Sean's back-him-down, turn-around jumper?
Yeah, but as I say, I could never do that. It's like I'm always amazed at the players, the way they can do things that I had no idea. I relied on quickness and a first step and all those little fundamentals and changing, all these little moves that I had to free myself so that I didn't have a guy standing in my face taking a jump shot. And, it was unstoppable. He got up so fast and got rid of it, and he held the ball high. It was classic. It was very classic. And he was straight up and straight down, and he was very accurate with that shot. As I say, I think a coach could rely on him and say, hey, we need some kind of offense right now. Can you go in there and get us 4 or 6 points in the next 5 or 6 minutes? And he could do that. Now, he never averaged, ever once in his career, did he average double figures. And he only, I think he was probably around 20, 21 minutes a night playing throughout his career. But that's another thing. He never, ever complained about his minutes, the number of minutes, whether he got 2 minutes or whether he got 22 minutes. He wasn't that way. I think he was a great role model for a lot of people. And you can see, I read his Instagram today, and it was long and lengthy, and you can see how grateful he is to so many people for having this kind of career. And you can see the number of players reaching out to him, not only players on the Warriors like JaVale McGee and Jonas Derebko and Draymond and everybody reaching out to him, but players on other teams that he played with and against, of course. And so it just tells you, how people regard him. And, he was a quiet leader. He never was a rah-rah guy. he was extremely quiet, rather introverted, and but his actions spoke volumes, and that's why he was a beloved teammate, because he just led by example. And again, I say, and here's a guy also to get back in the league. Remember, he had to go to the NBA Development League for a while, and that's pretty humbling.
When it still was the D League, not the G League, too. Jim Barnett, Warriors color analyst, now with us on the Dialpad guest line. Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. And do you know, Jim, and I don't know if you have any insight onto this in particular, but I know a year or two ago, Livingston had talked about, you know, kind of going to school a little bit with Bob Myers and thinking about a front office career and his future. Do you know if he's talked about that with the Warriors at all, or what his sort of post-career plans are?
I have no idea. It would not surprise me if he has done that. May have been premature when he was still kind of, I think when this season ended, I think he wanted one more year. And evidently that has not materialized for him. But I think he'd be good with that. And as I say, he's come such a long way in his life as a 19-year-old kid to get drafted, and all the things that have happened to him. And he played on 10 different teams. I did look that up today because I played on 7 teams, and there are not many players that play on more teams. And I read that about him, and you know, he played all over the place. And 10 different teams is something remarkable. And I expect someone will give him a shot and give him a chance. As they say, he's a very mature young man, and he's still a young man,
yeah.
34.
Jim, who's going to have to emerge for the Warrior bench to make up for some of the off-season losses here?
Well, that's you're catching me before I've seen anybody at training camp, and it would be speculation on my part. But I like Jordan Poole, their rookie from Michigan, simply because I think he's going to be able to score. And he's going to be, you know, I think this is, I've got to be careful saying all these things. He's not a great shooter, but he's one of those guys. And I think Damian Lee, the two-way player, could make the roster this year because he's one of those players too. I call them, you know, they're kind of YMCA players. They play great and disruptive basketball, a little bit of sloppiness to them. But they can put the ball in the basket, and they don't have any fear. And I think Poole is along the same thing as Damian Lee. I like the acquisition of Alec Burks because I think that he's explosive, and he can give you a 12 or 14 point quarter. I think they're going to have a better bench than they had last year. And I like the signing of Willie Cauley-Stein if he can get a little more consistent. I love that they got Kevon Looney, and I know this. I'll say this: Curry and D'Angelo Russell. I would bet a lot of money on that. They're going to give you 50 points a night. They're going to give you 48 to 52 points on average this year. I think they've got backcourt scoring. I'm a little concerned defensively with their size and lack of focus on defense from that starting guard standpoint. But I think the Warriors are going to surprise a lot of people. I think they're going to be okay.
Who becomes the new him in the locker room, though? And I'm not talking about the traditional definition of leadership, but his own sort of version of it, which was he could spot when a guy was sort of in turmoil and just come over and just quietly talk to him without solving necessarily the problem, but just being a sounding board, because there are not very many guys on any team who have that skill. Is that simply something the Warriors are going to have to learn to live without?
Well, they're going to. When you speak about that, I immediately think of Andre Iguodala, and you're going to miss his leadership in that regard. Who would do those types of things? He was just great with his teammates that way. Kevon Looney's not going to step up and do that. He's too quiet, and that's not going to work. Klay Thompson, no way. Although his personality is getting a little bigger than it used to be. I think Stephen Curry is the guy, and he's the team leader, obviously. But I think he can also he's the senior guy on the team. He's the oldest guy at age 31. Now this is, I think, his 11th year in the league. So I think he's a stabilizing influence that way, and he's going to be encouraging to teammates. And so, and of course, Steve Kerr with his command and his leadership skills. That takes care of a lot of problems that you might have with other teams. I'm looking forward to everything. I'm disappointed, and I look back. It's too bad they didn't win another championship. We all know there's no excuse. No, we're not using excuses. We all know if Kevin Durant would have been healthy, and of course Klay Thompson, that would be ring number four out of the last 5 years. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. And I would love them to go to that beautiful new Chase Center with the legacy of four championships in the last 5 years and going on it back to back to back, you know, a three-peat, if you will. But that didn't come to pass. But, there are a lot of good things happening, and I'm still, I got another year older, Ray. you're not near my age, but, you look at things in a different perspective when you turn 75.
Ah, stop whining.
Jim, Ray's been looking at things from a 75-year-old perspective for about 40 years now, so I don't know. I don't know if he's going to change that much when he actually gets there. Jim Barnett, Warriors color analyst, we always appreciate your time, man. And you're right, this is going to be one interesting year of basketball. Should be exciting, yeah. And we're back at camp in a couple weeks. Here we go.
Yes, we will. And then I'm going to keep you on today so I can hear some more comments about Roger Goodell by the infamous Ray Ratto.
Yeah, I expect you will get some of that. Jim Barnett, ladies and gentlemen, and now we enter our 3 o'clock hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.